Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
20 million pound player? No, probably not. I mean, it's Crystal Palace, mate. It's not Real Madrid.
It's Wednesday, which means it's time for the normal football podcast on a Wednesday. The front three. What's unusual about this one is Adam's not on all the way through, hence why you hear my voice at the beginning. Dave, it's good to have you with me.
Cheers, mate. How are you, Lawrence?
I'm okay. Everyone in London's sick this week. So I'm trying to avoid it. I'm getting away from London. Kristen, speaking of getting away from London, Kristen subs in for Adam tonight. Kristen, it's lovely to have you.
I'm warm and I'm ready.
Good. Speaking of which, let's talk about the warm, ready games which were served up for us just on Wednesday evening. Guys, can we just quickly brush upon Everton FC absolutely thrashing Newcastle? Kristen, you said on Twitter that there was a better yardstick than this match for Newcastle.
I think West Brom will be a better yardstick. I noticed something, and we'll come on to talk to this when I was at the stadium light this week, that the first kind of 10-15 minutes, because Sunderland started really energetically, yeah, it got the crowd on side, and I think that in turn built a further momentum and they helped each other along.
Yeah,
I think getting those new players at home, where in fairness Newcastle I think have been better this season anyway, I think you'll potentially see how close or far away they are to kind of reaching their peak, which is a team realistically that's probably 12th to maybe 10th. I think when it's their day, the problem is it just hasn't been their day very often this season.
It's funny that you mentioned Newcastle, because we interview the true Geordie later on in this podcast, and he talks a lot about those signings in January. He expresses opinions about those in his normal eloquent way. I didn't trail that properly, and rightly so, because most people probably just came here just for that. I feel them clicking ahead now. But Kristen, they were beaten 3-0. And, you know, the main instigator of that victory, Ross Barkley, is what most people are going to say. But you're saying almost a little bit different to that.
I'm saying in the sense that, again, I find myself quite frustrated when I watch Ross Barkley. I find him quite ponderous on the ball. And I noted that the Goodison Park crowd kind of shared the same sentiment, because yeah, they kind of, not jeered him per se, but kind of voiced a bit of frustration when he would hold on to the ball, and he would want to try and either beat his man or do something game-defining every time he picked up the ball. And I do find him quite a frustrating player to watch, and it's something that I'm not really sure if Martinez can coach out of him, because it's entirely a personal thing how long you hold on to the ball for.
Interesting. And Dave, do you agree with that? I mean, you know, there's yeah, a lot of theory that, you know, I mean, Mourinho hates the ball hanging around in midfield, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where if you lose the ball in that area, it's very, very dangerous. With Barkley, I do kind of agree there is that moment where he could play the simple passes. It's interesting if you compare him to someone like Julian Weigl, you know, the young German, 20 years old. He gets the ball away very, very quickly. Obviously, different position, plays more deeper in midfield, but it's similar. They're both sort of central midfielders. Weigl will play the easy pass, keep the ball, whereas Barkley will always try something. I think what Kristen mentioned before we started recording is that sometimes that isn't the right answer. Sometimes it is just get it, shift it. Don't lose the ball.
Do you think that's partly coached into people, though? Because, you know, on the continent, you'd imagine that's coached differently, right, Chris? I mean, you know, there's the Dutch approach as well, which is, you know, a very different one. And, you know, it's almost like the way that players perceive themselves and the way that people perceive the players, they will be evaluated on that. Some players, you know, like Paul Scholes, were very good at circulating the ball, But then there are other players in the Premier League who circulate the ball, and some people, their evaluation is too basic. You know, he only makes sideward passes, etc., etc.
I think actually that there's a great anecdote in this month's 442 on their big kind of Pep Guardiola special, where he talks about in one of his very early books, Johan Cruyff saying that if you're fouled, it's your fault because you should have released the ball earlier. And that's what I find with Barkley. I know he does seem to pick up a lot of fouls himself, and I think part of that is because he holds on to it too long. Now, there are certain instances like tonight where he wins a penalty. That's great, fair enough. Mm. Further away from the field where you're picking up those free kicks, it can actually, while it seems on the surface, great, we've got a free kick, we've got a set piece, I think actually can be quite detrimental to the momentum.
Mm.
And in some instances, it's not actually the best thing to get a free kick. The best thing is to keep the ball moving and move it quickly so you can get closer to the goal.
More on midfield moves. One of the few kind of outstanding games for Everton again this season, either on or off. Dave, let's move on to your United. Your United also won 3-0. A more convincing performance? Were you convinced by what you saw?
Surprise. We scored two goals in the first half. It was absolutely crazy. But no,
that's 200%.
It's an improvement, but no, it looked a lot better. I think playing Juan Mata and Wayne Rooney up front together is going to work, really. I think that has to be happened, you know, week in, week out. With Wayne Rooney's movement, he is becoming a bit deeper. He's becoming more of a false nine, getting involved. So you need someone to run the other way. I think Juan Mata, we have this idea that he's this creative player, likes to get on the ball, like a David Silva, but he's not. He's more of a player that likes to get in behind, likes to score goals. He's more of like a penalty box player, like a Thomas Muller, that his movement gets him into that area and then he'll do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like today he was yesterday, he was excellent at playing the pass, getting into the box. And you look at the third goal that United scored, Wayne Rooney drops really deep, pulls a Stoke defender, one of the centre-backs, out of place and opens up this massive space for Juan Mata, who's already making that move going forward, where I think United have the issue they've had this season is too many players are coming towards the ball, not going in behind. Whereas with Mata and Rooney, it's got great balance in attack.
Interesting. Do you think that comes from both of them or more Mata?
No, I think both. I think together. I think we've seen Mata play off Martial, and we've seen all types of different combinations of Rooney, Mata, Martial, and Memphis and Lingard. But I think this is the right combination.
Hmm.
Still think Jess Lingard, he took his goal very, very well, but he still lacks a lot of...
I like Jess.
He lacks a lot of creativity.
He's fantastic on Football Manager, isn't he? He's a really big talent when you first get to United.
He became a Dynamo Dresden legend in last year's edition of the game. So I do love him for that reason, but I do feel he needs to believe himself a bit more. I feel like he plays the easy pass too much. There was a moment where he nicked the ball off one of the centre-backs or one of the deep midfield, like we mentioned before, not losing it in that area. And then he played the ball backwards to Memphis Depay, where he was one-on-one with the centre-back. I want him to take the centre-back on there.
So you want him to take people on, but you don't want Barkley to take people on? Or are you talking specifically in that area?
Specifically in that situation. If you nick the ball off the opposition, you go at them. And I think that Barkley, my criticism of Barkley is where he's a little bit deeper in midfield. Or a team has got compact and then he's holding onto the ball too much there.
But
when you've got that counter-attacking option, you need to go. Don't go forward. Don't go backwards. Go forward.
Well, yeah. And Kristen, it's interesting that Dave speaks about that, because the criticism that Jurgen Klopp had of his Liverpool side was, we didn't make the right decisions. And he said if they had have made the right decisions, then they would have come away with a win. Mercurial moments almost from Jamie Vardy, and you know, a lot of people saying after he hadn't scored for such a long time that you know, this was a fantastic way to come back.
It was. I think in many ways his goals kind of surmise why he's doing so well this season, because the second one was a tap-in, and I think he has a lot more versatility to him than I think people give him credit for.
Mm.
He's often been, I think, marginalised as just someone that runs off the shoulder. I think he's developing a lot more to his game now.
That was how a lot of his goals were scored, wasn't it? Although, you know, it does take away from him having to score them and strike them well, and you know.
Yeah, I think those were just the situations that were presenting themselves.
Mm.
I don't think it was a case that he couldn't score the goals. And I think we touched on this before. I spoke to some of the people at Stocksbridge who watched him when he first started, and they were adamant that actually his game hasn't changed a drastic amount since he was with them. That there's no kind of magic mercurial moment that's made him into this striker. He's always been this kind of player, a little bit more of a versatile forward who, yes, while founded on pace, I don't think you can take that away from him either. That's something that he's been blessed with and is using intelligently, because I can find you enough strikers who don't use pace intelligently in the same way that he does.
Mm. Watford drew with Chelsea 0-0. I don't really need to run you through the rest of these. Liverpool obviously lost 2-0 against Leicester. Not a great result for Liverpool. Liverpool playing aside, when you look at that lineup, then you sort of say, well, you know, what can Liverpool do without playing Christian Benteke? And it seems it's playing Firmino, but you question whether Firmino is getting the service that he wants and the shape of team that he wants. But again, Klopp saying in the press conference, trust us.
Is it the one thing I wonder with Liverpool, and you can tell me this because you know much better than I do.
Yeah.
You've got Benteke, you've got Firmino, etc.
Yeah. Are either of them the answer?
Would it be fair to say you've almost got a front line of an elite club, in the sense that you've got so many options?
Yeah.
But you're looking for someone to lead the line. So whereas you got some clubs sort of like, let's go Man United way back when, you had the four famous ones, Cole York, Sheringham, etc.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bit of a balance between how good they all were, so you never felt like one was dominant. Whereas it seems like Liverpool are constantly trying to push one forward. They're almost saying to the likes of Firmino and Benteke, one of you stamp your authority on this and take the lead and be our star.
Well, it does seem like either or, doesn't it? But that seems because maybe they can't play together. I mean, it's unusual. I think Liverpool maybe have put them on the field together. Maybe it was one point this season. It might be more. I'd imagine I'm going to get tweets because of that. But basically, I think a lot of people find it hard to see how they can play together. And I think when they did play together, it wasn't fantastic. The point would be that it's also about getting service to those people. It doesn't seem that Liverpool have the right people to get the right kind of service. I went to go see Liverpool-West Ham. I felt quite sorry for Christian Benteke because the crowd get on his back very quickly. And it almost makes him panic into making poor decisions, funnily enough. And for that
Why
reason...
Why do you think that is? Why do you think they do get on his back? Just because of the way the season's going?
Not only because of the way the season's going, but I find it unusual. I don't know why they get on his back so quickly and why they've sort of almost outcast him so fast. People sort of say, you know, you should be running, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. When I watched him, I actually felt like it wasn't a terrible game from him. Obviously Liverpool didn't score, but he got into the right positions and people were blaming him for the ball, hitting him, those kind of things. It's a weird... Anfield's a strange place to go right now because it's sort of like, we know something should be going on, but they don't quite know what. And I think people are waiting for the end of the season almost there. It's unusual. It's weird. It's a strange club to be around at the moment. But Chris, you were at the Stadium of Light last night, on Tuesday night, I should say. What was it like to be there?
It was good. It was windy, exceptionally windy, because it's obviously near the sea, so it gets that really biting wind from there. I think there was a lot for Sunderland to take from, and there was a lot of energy. I just didn't think there was that clinical moment of execution. That's what it really lacked. I think, again, if Joe Hart isn't in goal, they likely get a draw, because he pulled off a sensational, what looked like a double save at first, but actually hit the post to keep them in it. And I think in general, he was a very strong performer for City. Past him, there wasn't a great deal to take from it from a City perspective. I don't think they dominated the game. I thought Toure looked incredibly laboured. I wrote as much for ITV this week. Whereas with Sunderland, they had all the energy, but I don't think they just had that person to kind of steal the moment in the same way that City did. And it was a stark contrast in that sense. You had a team that, again, was kind of flying around in Sunderland and trying everything, but they just didn't have that little second of quality that they needed.
Bournemouth beat Crystal Palace 2-1. Palace now on that terminal downward slide that most people forecast, because it's, well, you know, we know who it is. Anyway, moving on. Obviously, I'm so far, I like Benekophobia, but both of you pre-podcast were saying, yeah, not so much.
No, I think what we kind of were alluding to, that as soon as Callum Wilson comes back, I think Callum Wilson's a striker of a lot more quality, but Benekophobia will do a very, very good job to sort of take his mantle whilst Callum Wilson's out injured. Afobe's an interesting one, obviously very pacey, and that's what Callum Wilson gave Bournemouth at the start of the season. It gave opposition defenders something to think about, so the defence was pushed back, open up space for the midfield. So I feel that'll be the same way for Afobe, and obviously he did score the winner against Palace, which is crucial for Bournemouth's safety. But I think getting a Trubet and Lewis Crabbe back, I think Bournemouth have done really, really well in the window.
Mm. Let's move around Europe a little bit here, guys. First of all, we'll go to Spain. Like, yeah, let's go to Spain. That'd be lovely. Barcelona 7, Valencia 0. That's embarrassing, isn't it? Is it embarrassing? Are we focusing too much on Gary Neville here, guys?
I don't think his methods are getting across.
What do you mean? Dave?
Me? Yeah. I just think that it's difficult to first managerial job going to Valencia, which is a massive political cauldron out there. Mm. He doesn't speak the language. It's a very difficult job to go. Hopefully he does get it right.
Paella.
Probably. There was a great moment in the game where Cheryshev came on for Valencia, and the Barcelona fans stood up and applauded him, obviously, for he kind of knocked Real Madrid out of the cup for being suspended and playing in one of their earlier rounds of the cup. So it's quite an interesting moment. But I think it got to give Gary, if he wants time, give him time. But maybe it's not the quite right job for him. I could see him leaving at the end of the season.
Well, I mean, he's definitely going to leave at the end of the season, but that's probably going to play against him. At this point, anyway. I mean, the weird thing is, Kristen, you can write the narrative either way, can't you? Either he can be that fun guy who learns something while he's there, and you know he leaves at the end of the season, or it can be terrible for him because he could be like Manuel Pellegrini and he can't motivate the players. Blah 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 blah.
I do feel sorry for him because I think Valencia, they're a bit like a hollow ship in the sense that they look huge and they are in terms of history, but they've sold a number of their best players consistently the last few years, and the players they've bought I don't think have been good enough in return. So it's left him with this team that looks huge and you think should be doing well, but actually are struggling, having to rely on young kids a lot of the time.
Well, Negredo up front. I mean, he said against, was it Sporting Gijón? He said, you know, we should have been 5-1 out there.
I think as well, the other issue he faces is he's going to a league and a culture that he has no idea of. And is having to learn yesterday. That in itself, I think, bears out a lot of issues because it's not to do with the language or anything like that. I think he can get his message across fairly easily. But the way that you break down Spanish teams, I think he may know, in theory at least, how to stop the elite that he gets to see. Does he see enough of Sporting Gijón to truly understand and truly fathom the plan?
Does he need to would be a lot of people's questions.
I think so. I think there are nuances to every league that you only get from being there for a while. That's why I think he needed more time. The difficulty is I just don't see how it gets any better for them. I think they'll stay up, certainly. But again, this is the game against Barcelona is their worst result since 93 or something.
Wow.
Ridiculous. He's collecting a lot of bad records.
Do you think he can look his family in the eye?
The concern I have is that these are the kind of spells that really put people off management. And I'd rather see him have another go at it, at least. I would hate for this to be the first and last job that he takes.
It's funny. It is interesting you say that because, you know, I mean, people talk about, what was his name? Brian Clough quitting management because of the bad spell he had, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, look, you know, he could have, in theory, gone a totally different route. A number of coaches, there are ones who kind of have that first iffy spell and then don't really look. I think Shearer is another one who kind of, he had that 8 games, he's had no interest since. Yeah. I don't think he took the Newcastle job, for example, solely because it was Newcastle. I think he was genuinely interested. But when you see the pressure that they're under, you see how kind of ubiquitous the criticism is if you're struggling. It's a lot of stress. It is a lot of pressure to put on anyone. And when you have viable career options elsewhere, what is the motivation?
You sort of wonder why, in a way, don't you? Why someone would, and then why or whether someone can keep themselves separate from that. Obviously, some people can't. Speaking of which, Kristen, Heitinger has just retired, hasn't he? And gone to Ajax.
Well, he signed for Ajax in the summer from Hertha Berlin, and he said kind of this week he wanted one last season with them challenging for a title, and that would be him done. Mm-hmm. He's only made 2 appearances, I think, for them this season. And I think what he alluded to was that kind of injury has played a part in him calling time on things. He is very young. I think personally he was one of the golden generation that was expected to do very well along with Schneider and Van der Vaart.
He didn't.
his career hasn't panned out in that same way. I mean, Van der Vaart hasn't had the most exceptionally brilliant career.
No, Schneider really.
Schneider's had it. I think Schneider's just slightly above them because of the Champions League with Inter.
Sure.
That's the only thing that kind of elevates him. But that whole group, I don't think it achieved.
I even see Van Persie in that bracket, if I'm completely honest.
Well, I mean, in terms of they all came through Ajax at the same time.
Yeah.
In terms of that group, if you will.
Mm.
And it's always unfortunate to see a player like that retire, because you've got to think, well, you were expected to do more. You have to be disappointed yourself in the way that things have transpired. And how do you come to terms with that? And how do you accept that what has happened, essentially?
I don't know.
He will join the coaching staff, as you said. So there's already a future for him, which is often the biggest and most important part in transitioning away from playing football, is to find something to replace it.
And he's more football. He's alongside some really good coaches. I mean, that's it's not a dream team. It's a dream team if they're playing on the pitch. I don't know if they're the same off it, but that's a pretty good side there, isn't it?
There is. There's Stam, Wim-Jong, Davids is the sporting, Overmars, excuse me, is the sporting director. So he gets a bit of a mixed review, but he's involved. Bergkamp is there. I think that's one thing you can say about Ajax, is that actually their integration of former players is pretty exceptional. And I personally think it's something all clubs could learn from. And I'm often surprised that really you only see clubs integrate their former players in sort of ambassadorial roles. And I mean, I'm sure that's great. I'm sure it placates the clients that you bring to the games and things. I feel like they can talk to you in a way that few people can. They have an esoteric knowledge of what it's like to sample the football club. And then equally, I imagine in some cases they've got exceptional experience that they can bring to it.
Do you think he's almost the perfect mix of sort of ideology and, especially in a country like the Netherlands, is a perfect mix of ideology, lifestyle and football, and that comes out with a kind of, almost a quite balanced sort of, I know what I'm getting at here, but, quite a balanced sort of cultured person almost. It kind of suits them to be that way. But there was one time where it was similar in England. You could have done the same, there was the boot room and those kind of things. And it almost seems like, Holland and a couple of other countries have gone down a different route in terms of their societal development. Whereas Britain and other people have gone down a different route and moved away from maybe something that would allow them to implement a system like that.
I think it's more prominent in Holland. I mean, Ruud van Nistelrooy just left the Dutch national team to become striker coach with PSV. So, again, the idea of going back is fairly well-versed and fairly the done thing.
Mm.
I don't see it as prominent in England as that. I mean, there are a potential number of reasons you could go into. Perhaps the fact that, again, not many clubs here have sporting directors. So when you're bringing in a manager, they're going to bring in a lot of their own people they're familiar with, which is understandable. I think when you have the sporting director structure, it's easier to bring those other people in. Equally, I mean, the current coach is De Boer at Ajax, so he knows those guys anyway, so he trusts them in the same way that Cocu is at PSV, so he knows Van Nistelrooy. I think there's a lot more familiarity in the Dutch game. I think it's a much smaller circle, and it's obviously different in the context of where it's placed in the elite kind of ranking of leagues in Europe. So it's able to be close in it, whereas we hear, I don't know how much I buy into it personally, that everybody wants to come to the Premier League, be it players, managers, etc.
Even I don't want to go.
It can potentially, I would argue, be harder to maintain that tight-knit circle when you have, look at Swansea, for example, Francesco Guidolin coming in and taking over.
Yeah.
Is he going to be able to relate? Is he going to want to relate to someone who is a Gary Monk, if you will, someone that has been with the club for a long time and is part of the furniture?
It's a good question. It's one that faces a lot of Premier League clubs right now. Does their culture attract people? And that's part of the problem, maybe, at Manchester United now, and maybe, Liverpool as well. Do they have the culture to attract other people?
There's a beautiful sort of Bobby Robson quote about what is a football club, and he talks about, the people. And I'm a big believer in that person. I'm a firm believer that very much the people make a football club, because it is a community thing. And we have to remember that with all this kind of globalization and everything. And I'm all for bringing in new ideas, new people. That's great. I also think you do need a little bit of a mix. It's almost like fitting out a house, you need a little bit of a mix in terms of antiques and more modern things, and to switch things around.
I mean, that is a funny analogy for, you know, a fairly young listener base, but it's okay. I understand. It works. Now, let's move on to the transfer window very quickly. We'll brush upon the fact that Lazio fans were racist yet again. Anything else to say about that, really, apart from the fact that Lazio fans... I don't know if it's actually just Lazio fans, most reports are saying it's Lazio fans making monkey chants at the game and saying disparaging things. Not fantastic right now. Not a fantastic practice right now in Italy, what's going on, considering the manager's on the sideline. Was it the Napoli manager who was... Sarri made the homophobic comments, what people are saying. Then Mancini got commented about that, and the Italian press then called him a hypocrite because he'd called an Italian journalist allegedly the same term. It seems a fairly sort of... they're ignoring a terrible cultural... Not even a problem. It's literally something that seems that they could so easily acknowledge it, but they just don't. And it's unsurprising when the people at the very top have also made very questionable comments about players like Balotelli, etc. Am I wrong or am I wrong?
You're right there, mate. Shame. It's a big issue, isn't it?
Shame. Let us know your views on that. We'd be interested to find out whether you guys would still watch, a team where the manager is a homophobe or a racist. I feel like Alan Partridge. Let's move on to the transfer window. Guys, Jorge Mendes has made... Kristen, how much money has he done in Europe? In the world?
1.25 billion in transfer deals.
Dave, is that a lot of money?
That is quite a lot of money, mate.
Yeah. Mm. How's he done that?
Loads of players, right?
Do you think he has a lot of players on his books, or do you think it's the quality? It's called sort of a balance of quality and quantity, almost.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's done very well getting players from South America to the Portuguese clubs and then moving them on into Europe. You know, James Rodriguez, Di Maria,
Ronaldo.
Look at Falcao, Mangala, Silva. There's all these players that have sort of come over, and then he's picked them up maybe at the right time and has made a load of cash out of them.
Yes. Some people seem to be happy to have him as well, which I find not unusual, but, I wonder how... Some people say he's the most powerful man in Europe, in European football at least.
That's a fair shout, isn't it? You know, the influence he has on clubs.
And probably higher-ups.
Yeah, you'd say so. Yeah.
When you listen to, how people do their transfers, you'd imagine also the way he conducts himself, the way he has a harem. He's not just him, it's kind of, he's a company now, isn't he? He's a bit... Is it fair to say he's a businessman, not a businessman?
I don't understand the question.
Right. Good.
I mean, he comes from my humble beginnings. If you can, I would read Andy Brassel's profile on him. It's really in-depth and really good because, Andy does know his Portuguese football. And he comes from quite humble beginnings. Parents out,
Andy,
I think they
were
bakers.
Right.
Both. Both. Right. Yeah, no, Andy is very much a man of the people as well.
Yeah.
That's why I like him. But I think what you have to say is, do we run a danger of any man becoming almost a monopoly in football? And that's where it's starting to feel like with him.
Yeah. Well, we mentioned FIFPro again and how their laws may change things. The change to the law of basically work, the working laws for players may change things for agents and for clubs. Maybe giving the power back to the players. And then you wonder, do you go back to that? Who was the person who sang the song? Lovers they may... Yeah.
Actually, no, it's not Gabrielle. It's...
She also did the soundtrack to Romeo and Juliet. It is...
Is it Enya?
No. It's not Sade, it's... I'm sure someone's shouting it right now. It is... Romeo... I've got the soundtrack right here. Can anyone want to say it before I say it?
Desiree,
yeah. And she basically says in one of her songs, some people want to be owned by other people.
Super agents.
Yeah, in many ways, she's ahead of her time.
You gotta be smart, you gotta be connected.
Gotta know Jorge.
In many ways, I do think that song...
youth tournaments.
In many ways, I do actually think that song was about Jorge Mendes. You gotta be bad, you gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard, you gotta be tough, you gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool.
In the safe.
You gotta be cool, you gotta be calm. You got to stay together. And then I think what Jorge always realises, love will save the day. Right. Should we move on? Talk a little bit more about the transfer window. Dave, your favourite transfer signing of the window?
Mbula to Stoke Alona. What a signing.
Good, Dave. Very good. Why is it good?
Because he is a very, very technically gifted footballer. Wonderful wet left foot. Strong, physical. Really good on the ball.
Record-breaking fee.
Yeah, record-breaking fee, lovely body balance. He's just a very, very good player, good addition to the Stoke squad.
Then why is no one else going for him? Do you think people expected him to leave in the summer and therefore, you know, when Stoke came in late, it was sort of like, wait, we wanted him.
Well, according to reports, I only watched him when he was at Marseille and he was absolutely brilliant, but apparently he's had a bit of a poor spell at Porto, so maybe that's turned off a few clubs, but a player of that talent and that calibre, you know, if you've had a bad 6 months, it don't matter. You know, new situation, new start, get him in. It'll suit the Premier League so, so well, so physical.
Chris, your favourite signing of the transfer window?
It's split between two. Stefan Oshrawi to Roma.
Oh, that's a good one.
Got two already, which I'm delighted about because I'm a big fan of his. And Charlie Austin, I think.
Ooh, good one.
There's certainly enough reasons not to sign him. I think the knee is a certain issue. The thing, and we should most definitely put this to the listeners, we estimated he cost about $26 million by the time he's finished there, assuming he stays for his entire 4.5-year deal, based on his wages and the £4 million transfer fee.
Yeah.
Would you pay £26 million all in to have Charlie Austin for 4 and a bit years?
Mm. Good. Very good point. Dave?
I wouldn't know.
Although, I suppose if you work that out for every player, that then that sort of...
Well, if you think that some strikers cost kind of... $20 million on their own, minus wages. We've included the wages here as well, because that's obviously been a big thing, is the fact that he's on $100,000 a week.
Sure.
Because he costs so little.
But then, I mean, at the same time, Liverpool signed, James Milner on a free, but he's on $175,000 a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose over time, and the way that wages are going up, we will be able to inflate these things. I mean, Ronaldo gets what? $25 million a year?
Something like that.
And Fernando Torres was going to be the best paid player on the planet. You know? That's China for you guys. And that's also where my favourite transfer comes from. Jackson Martinez to China, the happiest man in China, guys.
He
looked like Aaron Lennon when he signed for Everton the first time.
Completely gutted.
Dave, why has he gone there?
Money talks, I think, in football these days. I think he's reportedly paid the fifth highest paid player in the world.
That is mental. Why has China suddenly got all this money, Dave?
Well, it's interesting. Obviously, Jorge Mendes was part of this as well, bringing over a load of his clients to China. But it starts with some investment from the Chinese government. They want to turn the Premier League, the Chinese Super League, as it's called, into a really big competition. Really interesting stat that jumps out to me in this whole shebang is in 2015, the rights were sold, for the TV rights were sold for $9 million. The latest deal that's come out for the next 5 years is $1.25 billion.
Oh, that's tiny compared to the Premier League.
Crazy.
Oh,
absolutely
right.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But it's just that jump up, that step up. You know, it's going up 1,000%, nearly over. It's just a load of money.
More Chris, than it's funny, isn't it? Because that Chinese economy's got a lot of question marks over it, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So is the UK one, you know.
I mean, the steel industry is one that kind of jumps to my mind in terms of...
Well, yeah, they absolutely stole Jackson Martinez.
The way they kind of conduct themselves, it's... in general...
You're coughing because you're not... A cough indicates that you've got something to say, but you can't say it.
Well, not necessarily. In the case of this, I mean, I read something and watched a documentary about the huge construction issues they have in terms of building these ghost towns that nobody lives in and projects that don't get finished.
Was that a Vice documentary you watched?
It was.
Yes, it was good, wasn't it?
It was good.
Yeah. They just go to fake Paris, and there's just people having weddings in fake Paris.
There's lots of condominiums or tower block flats, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, I don't think they like to be called that anymore, but yeah.
That aren't finished. It's a bizarre country in that sense. I think we still don't really understand China. I think we have a snapshot of what we see through traditional media. I don't know how much that genuinely penetrates the surface and gives us a good idea.
Do you think that's part of it? Is that, you know, the money is a huge draw, and you're like, just a few years in China, but then you get there and you're Jackson Martinez, and you think, right, how am I playing internationals here? You know, how am I? Where's my family? Where's my culture? Where's everything? You know, where are my touch points?
The sustainability is a more pressing concern for me. I mean, I tweeted out this week about it feeling like NASL in the 70s. Like, you get a check and you get a check and everyone gets big money.
Yeah.
It's whether that can be maintained over the long. Again, investment is great. Bringing stars over, yes, it will have a benefit in the sense that perhaps they can improve the quality of the domestic players in some ways. I would want to be spending just as much, if not more, in the grassroots initiatives over there as well. The
problem is
you can sound a bit like a priest when you say that kind of those kind of things, because it seems like you're preaching for something that's not really realistic. Whereas the fact that four of the top five transfers in January in terms of value or cost come from China, that's a very big and equally.
And then Newcastle.
They're being well. No, Stoke is the other one.
Yeah, no, I know.
But To be a bit more blunt and less poetic about it, every time I see one of these deals, my instant reaction is they're getting absolutely mugged off there. So it's not as if they're doing deals that are a little bit above what a team in Europe would pay. They're paying astronomically higher than what a team in Europe would pay.
Yes.
They've essentially paid, I think, €3 million less for Jackson Martinez after an atrocious 6 to 8 months in Spain where he didn't look even close to what he was at Porto. So...
But then you think, I mean, so I'm told, and if you listen to the World Football Phone-In, they say, and you'll forgive me for forgetting the guy's name, he's on the World Football Phone-In right now.
Jordan, possibly.
Possibly, yes. But he was basically saying, you know, China's about status right now. You know, the passing of the communist government in such a way, you know, I know they still are, but, you know, the sort of the move forward for them, if you consider capitalism a move forward, then, you know... They're basically, it's all about status now. It's all about, you know, who have we got? Who can we get? Look what we can do. And it's, you know, it's the falsities that lie in that for some weird reason seem to be escaping a lot of people, weirdly. Sorry to bring you down like that. What I was thinking for both of you in that time, why do very few people factor in wages into a transfer? So, for instance, Chris just said, you know, Charlie Austin cost 26 over the life of a contract, etc. Is it because they don't expect players to go for the entirety of the contract? Because, Chris, I think the point you made earlier was Danny Osvaldo. And who else?
Gaston. Gaston and Osvaldo cost Southampton $50 million in fees and wages. That's why they've essentially been sell to buy of late.
Yeah.
But I think the reason they don't know is because players don't want you to know. That's one of the things... I've noticed.
So why do we know? Why do we know about China?
Well, I would imagine
again the Chinese just being status. Look how much we can pay.
Potentially, I think that's a shrewd point to make. I think certainly the status and the idea of look how much we're paying for these players.
Yeah.
Whereas in Europe, it's not like again in America, it's a different situation because everything's transparent and you can look up how much. Every player is earning it, and that has actually been quite a bone of contention for a lot of Europeans that move out there.
Yes,
to a few who don't like knowing, because the thing is certainly it's talked about in dressing rooms. When you can see it on paper, though, and you know for a fact that's how much they're on, it can breed division.
Why do you think that's because as a society we're not used, or not many people are used to talking about their wages, and they sort of see that inequality as a a slight on their own character.
Well, I think we could draw comparisons with our own industry. We don't talk about money.
Which I find unusual. And again, a lot of people are encouraged to maybe take time to talk about their money because if they did, they may end up earning higher wages.
True. I think part of that is as well, in a slight comparison to football, footballers share a lot of similarities to freelancers, I think, in terms of the security they have. Yes, they sign these contracts, but whether you can actually work is a totally different question altogether.
They love it, yeah.
And again, I think it's that idea of you negotiate what you're worth. And in our industry, that's kind of what you're told, is you negotiate what you're worth. And, you know, if it works for you, great. If it doesn't. And so you may earn 200-300 more than me per job.
Yeah, I just want to categorically say it's definitely a lot more than that. I'm kidding. All right, I'm kidding.
It's not
all right, Bantatelli.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily down to golfing quality. It can sometimes be down to the fact that you just negotiated better and you had more confidence. I mean, yeah. To be truthful, you and I have both had conversations where I've said to you, "I'm going to ask this person for this much," and you said, "Don't ask for this much. Ask for more," because that's essentially what someone in your position is worth.
Yeah, I mean, there were conversations in confidence, but it's a good point. But and in many ways, you still owe me that 10%. But the point is that people don't speak about money very often, Dave. Is that maybe because it is quite an open and shut case? And it's all, in many ways, isn't a very un-English thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's something that needs to be. We have all these undisclosed fees, which is a load of rubbish, right?
Yeah, that is bollocks. Yeah, I'll put that out there.
The market should be open, and we should know how much players are getting paid.
Well, if you're going to create this market, then yeah, exactly, yeah.
Because then it breaks down. Then you don't have these dodgy situations where bungs are being pushed and so forth, and you're paying Steve £5 on a Thursday next March a goal that he scored. You know, it's actually open there. And I think that's something that ultimately needs to happen in the Premier League, but it probably won't.
Yeah, a dig there at Steve Malbronk. Anyway, one thing we definitely brushed over during this time was that Barcelona had two players that scored a hat-trick tonight. Just to finish on a nice note for our section, Barcelona with two hat-tricks. Two match balls. I mean, essentially, not both players can take the match ball home, can they?
Well, which is the match ball.
Exactly, yeah.
If you're operating a multi-ball system,
in modern football, you know, is there one match ball? Is it the one the referee picks up at the beginning?
Well, we'll have to ask him.
Who?
The referee.
So Guardiola's gone to City, guys. Obviously, pretty obvious news. Great news for everyone in the Premier League, Dave.
Yeah, great news for the Premier League. A manager of top-class quality, which will improve the league within, which will mean inadvertently that English clubs will do better in the Champions League. But it's very worrying for a certain other club in Manchester that haven't got the mighty Guardiola. Guardiola will bring to City is tactical flexibility, possession, and a winning mentality that's not been seen at City yet, especially in Europe. So expect City to be absolutely flying. Premier League champions for the next 3 years. And probably go on to win a Champions League. But, you know, that's life.
Kristen, what do you think about the move of Guardiola? I'm definitely interested to see, it probably won't be a very long stay, but it'll be a stay that maybe sets City up on a path.
I sense that's what they're doing. I think they're getting someone to lay foundations for them, because he's talked about wanting to eventually go back to La Masia and improve on their system, which sounds like a bold ambition. I think what it will do is it will allow itself, in terms of timing, for City to sweep the decks, because I think at the minute there are a fair few players there who aren't really suited not only to Guardiola's style and what he needs and the flexibility he requires from his players, but also for their ambitions. And
yeah.
I think we have to look at this from the fact that they're getting rid of Pellegrini because he doesn't match their ambitions in terms of what he's able to achieve. I think the same applies to some of those players. And so the timing, I think, is right for that. I don't think it'll be as clean and easy sweep as Dave professes. I mean, let's be honest, he hasn't won a Champions League at Bayern Munich yet. Yes, he swept the league. It was a much different palette of teams and what have you to work through. It'll be interesting, though. And I think that's all we can really ask of it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens and which managers come in to challenge him, essentially.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Dave, footballing-wise, it's going to be a great upgrade for City. Pellegrini's good, but, you know.
Yeah, Pellegrini's good, but he's not as good as Guardiola. I think Guardiola's flexibility in his ideas and what he wants to do is absolutely incredible. We saw the weekend five forwards on the pitch at once, interchange between a back four and a back three. I think that could be the only issue with City, is that they've not played a back three since the days of Mancini. Played it a few times, I think. So they'll have to get adjusted to that. They'll have to get adjusted to his methods. You know, he does want players to sit into certain zones at certain times. So it's going to take them a while to adjust. The signings that are going to come in are going to be so, so interesting. If Paul Pogba goes to Man City, I'm going to cry because he is absolutely world-class, on absolute fire this year. You know, watched him this week after not seeing him previously this season, and he was just the next level. So if he comes to the Premier League, it'll be very, very, very scary. You know, other players that might come, Lionel Messi's been linked, which would be incredible in the Premier League. He can prove that he can do it in a cold night in Stoke. But then centre-backs, I mean, that's going to be the big thing.
Yes.
All playing smart centre-backs. You know, look at City, what they got at the moment. I don't think any of those defenders.
Well, I mean, could he make them into smart people? I mean, you know, he does tend to have a pretty good effect on people.
I don't know. I feel that they're all the same mould, where they're all very aggressive against the ball. I just don't feel that we've got a reader or a ball player in there, really. You know, potentially Otamendi could be moulded into this role. But Mangala, not for me. Not under Guardiola.
Otamendi, I could see as a Mascherano type with a little bit of work.
That's why Mascherano is Mascherano, isn't it? Which is why I was so gutted when he went to Barcelona. Because
the good thing is, I think if you look at, from a City perspective, what Pep did with Boateng at Bayern Munich, he turned him into this defender who really was based largely on his physicality and made him a lot smarter as a defender. Yes, granted, Otamendi's at a later stage in his career. If he can have a similar impact with him, then I think you could.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Get something serviceable, but certainly from watching Otamendi this week, he does love to dive in. He's so desperate to kind of win the ball all the time, and it's something that I think De Michele suffers from as well. So I'd be amazed if both or either are actually there come the end of next season.
Now, Dave, yesterday we spoke to the True Geordie. I think it was actually the most enjoyable interview for you. You sat opposite him.
Oh, it was brilliant. Eye to eye with a True Geordie, a true monster of the world.
Yeah.
Monster of YouTube, a cracking lad.
Yeah, and I think Dave got put the best questions to him. He, he stared him down. He stared death in the face and came out
scary.
Smiling. And it's a great video as well. We videoed the whole thing. I've not edited it yet, but I will edit it tonight. It'll be up on YouTube towards the end of the week. I believe it'll also be on the True Geordie's channel. A 40-minute interview with the man, the myth, the legend, as Adam Boltwood would say. So let's just get straight into it. Here is the True Geordie on TF3.
It's the one and only, the True Geordie. Geordie, welcome.
Thanks for having us on, lads. Appreciate it. Thanks for the beer as well.
The beer is his feed today. It's a pleasure to have you on, Geordie. Obviously, going to be talking about Newcastle and the transfer window and their sort of season so far. First off, though, as a Newcastle fan, the most prominent Newcastle fan perhaps on the entire internet, what has been your assessment of Newcastle's season so far?
Feels fairly professional so far, lads. Just calm down.
Out there.
Calm down.
Assessment is a big word.
Assessment.
Basically, how's it gone?
How's it gone?
Yeah. Has it gone shit or has it gone well?
8 out of 10. Let's just 8 out of 10. Not that seems, cats. That's what I'm giving it.
Yeah.
8 out of 10.
That seems too high.
I think it would have been a 10 out of 10. I'd better hear no sign. But 8 out of 10, or maybe it is a bit high because we didn't get a defender. Mm. Fair one. But
five.
We just get
call it a 5.
We got John Joe Shelby. Quality English player.
Under weaknesses?
You've put Exma, Townsend, Gervais reference here, expect a lot of these on this. Townsend is a good signing. I think he's not a great signing, but it's good signing, and it's better than what we've got. Once again, English, something we've been lacking. Someone with a point to prove, like Shelby, a point to prove. We need many players like that as we can get. So people aren't just going to rest on the, oh, he's resting on his laurels, and get relegated. As many of the foreigners would have, we do. So apart from that, I think it's been good.
Well, what did you make of the fact that Newcastle went a bit mental in the transfer market and tried some of these players? Because was it?
I'm not sure they were mental. I think they made good investments. No. Which of those players is a bad investment?
I think it's fair to say there was a certain desperation around Newcastle. All of a sudden, going out and splashing the cash, 25 million for Berrettini.
It's not desperation. That's actual investment. Well, that's the investment they've lacked.
I think what happened was we've been neglecting the squad for so long, trying to do it on Mike Ashley's way of doing business, which is squeeze every single penny out of any avenue we can, which is exactly how he runs his clothes business. And he's trying to apply that to football. Obviously, he hasn't used illegal immigrants to play for him, just like, you know, he works for.
Like he hasn't for his own company.
No, he hasn't done that. Sorry, that's right. My good friend over here has just corrected me.
All we're saying is just facts.
It's just a 0 hour contract, isn't it? That's all they get.
Yeah, they've got a little bit better than that.
Actually, if football was on 0 hour contract.
He's just realised, like, you know, that doesn't work in football. Yeah. And I think he's had to bite the bullet and say, all right, all this money I've been raking in, it's time to put something back in the club so I can keep making money next season when the massive TV deal happens.
It's just really interesting. As a billionaire, you'd expect him to be sort of more Roman Abramovich than, you know, Mike Ashley, where he is sort of shaving the pennies because he's a fan.
It's the way he's made his money, though, isn't it, mate? He hasn't made his money in the oil industry, which is like a serious, easy place to make money. Clothes, he rose to power where all these other industries are, right? All these companies have been selling clothes for high prices and putting money into making them, but he thought, make them for nothing and sell them for like a decent
nothing
price. And he's done the Primark thing, hasn't he,
basically? Yeah, upgraded.
Would you have wanted Berahino in there? Because obviously Spurs are interested in Berahino. It was looking like 20, 25 million.
Why is that? Would you? I'm not sure I'd actually pay 25 million for Berahino.
No, I don't rate Berahino at all. But
you said you wanted him at one time.
No. I don't think Berahino is. I don't think he's what Spurs need. But was he what Newcastle need?
I think so. Is Berahino a 25 million player in general? No. Is Berahino a 20 million pound player? No, probably not. Especially not to Liverpool, Spurs or Man United.
Yeah.
But in Newcastle, he is a £25 million player because we're that desperate that what he brings to the table and the fact that we're trying to buy off a team that are currently around us, it just adds that money on.
It's quite interesting. Look at his age. You know, he's less than 23. You're thinking Harry Kane, Lukaku in the Premier League are only players that have scored more goals than him since start of last season. Is it just the potential? Is it the potential of Berahino, an English player again, that is sort of really blowing up the transfer market? And do you think that's an issue that we sort of throw too much money in at these younger players?
I think people are frightened that we're going to have another Lukaku situation.
Yeah.
Where we have a player who I wanted Lukaku.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day when Lukaku was there for the taking, I wanted him. I wanted Javier Hernandez when he was there for the taking at the time. And when you miss those boats, eventually you see a Berahino and you think, if we get him, yes, he's going to leave in 18 months max.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He'll be with. But if he knows 18 months, level, right? He does well for it, then it's worth the money, because if he does 100%. Well for it, given the attributes he's got, that he is like an Ian Wright-style striker, we'll get great money back from him and he'll do the business for us. So it's a win-win.
Interesting. It could be seen, obviously, it's an investment in a way. You've got to look at the market like that, haven't you? You know, bring him in, like you're saying, 18 months, he bangs in 30 goals, you're laughing. Real Madrid,
but is that going to happen? Real Madrid are not coming for Berahino.
How do you know? I think that's the current market we're at.
It's not the current market.
Real Madrid that we've got at the moment so short term that they'll do that.
Yeah, but they won't, Dave, because Real Madrid went for Gareth Bale.
They'll be coming for Dele Alli.
They're going for players that are beautiful. I don't think Berahino is the most beautiful player.
I think what the point he's making is, if you'd said the same thing about Gareth Bale originally when Gareth Bale 100%. Was the left back, you know, who didn't grow into the Berahino type player, whatever, or the Gareth Bale he is now, you know, nobody would have expected that, would they?
It's interesting, though. Obviously, Gareth Bale did have, I think, two or three seasons where he was banging, you know, over 10 league goals. Last season, it was 21 goals. So it's one of those things where if you know, Berahino was at Newcastle for 3 years, right, and he scores 10 goals next year, then sort of 15 goals, and then he scores 30 goals.
Not a Real Madrid, but a Manchester United, a Chelsea,
United,
an Arsenal,
a Villarreal.
They will pay, because of what we pay as well, you're going to have to add at least 15 million on top of that to sell him.
Overall, though, you're happy with Newcastle's January transfer window?
I am happy, mate. As long as we stay up, for Christ's sake. I can't
well, then, what about Newcastle's season so far? Then? Has it been a massive disappointment? Were you thinking in January you'd be in the relegation zone, or were you thinking actually maybe mid-table higher?
I predicted that I think we'd be around about like 14th, 15th. Okay. I kind of concentrate because these two keep recording each other. 14th, 15th, because I thought to myself, we've got some decent players, but a lot of the time, like, you look at Mitrovic, who's definitely talented and skillful, and he's got some great attributes, but he's young, he's 21, he's never played in the Premier League before, that's going to take a year to adjust. So he's not going to automatically be the finished product straight away. So I thought about 14th, 15th. I didn't think it would be this bad.
But is that not the market you're in right now? So you are, you know, if you're buying a Mitrovic, you're taking it's almost a money ball sort of thing.
We make gambles left, right and centre. That's what Newcastle do. You look at Tovan. I mean, that is it must be one of the worst signings in the history. I mean, don't get us wrong, I'm praying to God he comes back to Newcastle, but let's face it, if any, you know, Remy Cabella and Ben Arfa and all them are anything, God, that's not happening. Tovan was 12 million.
Really interesting as well, because the season before he threw his toys at the pram at Lille.
Threw his toys at Pam.
At Pam.
Very
so
sorry.
Pam got beat, and he kicks off.
Was she
wasn't Neil's, training?
You know, Chelsea yeah. girl was that. Was that what happened? There?
So yeah. So obviously, he kicked off as anything. Decided not to play, and then forced to move to Marseille. Then the next summer, he moved to Newcastle.
He was in the worst team of the year in League One before we signed him.
But so is Origi.
Crazy.
And Origi now has been said. But I mean, he's not fantastic. He did score quite a few goals for Liverpool when he was playing in the right position under Jurgen Klopp.
Let's face it, though. The difference being is Origi has attributes that translate directly into the Premier League.
So pace.
He's got physical strength and he's got pace. He might not be that technically gifted, but based on that, you can do all right.
Yeah.
But when you're Tovan, he's not particularly quick.
No.
He's not strong. And if you're not quick or strong and you're buying from a foreign league, I've got to wonder, what are you thinking?
Well, what you're thinking is he has he's shown the potential that other people have shown to bulk up. So, for instance, Coutinho, when he first came to the league, wasn't particularly strong. Inter Milan had injured him a lot, and
injured him.
They had because
they beat him
because they wanted him
injured
to bulk
because
they wanted him to bulk up, and he couldn't bulk up. And what Liverpool saw was they said, "Right, you haven't bulked him up in the right way. We'll take him. We'll bulk him up properly." And he did bulk up properly.
Let's talk. You're talking about taking risks there. What about Steve McLaren? How much of a risk was that, bringing him in?
Because
it hasn't quite worked so far.
Are you all right swearing on this podcast?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because I've been in that many places today, I don't know what the hell the rules are anymore. Fucking stupid idea, to be honest, initially, because you're looking at his track record. It's just fucking madness, mate. It is absolute madness. And I look back at it and I just think, you get lucky that John Carver didn't take it down. And I mean, that was lucky as it gets. That was so ridiculous. And you think to yourself, right, go and get someone, a nice, stable manager now who's just going to settle the ship. And, you know, we're not going to do anything amazing for the next 3 years, but we're going to be nice and settled. And then we can go and get someone and maybe bring one on further than that. And we go and get someone who is a mediocre championship manager who's failed at any time. He's been at a really high level.
Well, no, didn't he win the league? He's won the league.
Won the league.
What has he done in an actual... in an actual elite league? The best achievement in my mind that he had was when he was the coach for Man United in '99.
I think the best he had was Middlesbrough.
Yeah, Borough, the UEFA Cup final, did very well there. Yeah. But again, it just seems a bit weird. It seems like Steve McLaren was really good in the 90s.
He's been dining out on that for too long, and I'm fucking sick of it.
I kind of agree with that. I think that...
Jesus. I don't know. I think what he is he's a good coach. I'm not sure he's a great manager.
I think that's the difference,
isn't
it?
That's exactly right, mate.
Yeah.
That's why he did
so you need John Carver and Steve McLaren. No. You need a man who can put his arm around them, John Carver, right? You need someone who can go, where's Insomnia?
I made a love child.
Where's Insomnia? Do you mean in Zogbia? Yeah, where is he? Get me Insomnia.
Oh,
have you got Insomnia?
Mate. Back off, mate.
Yeah, John Carver had Insomnia.
Is that a frustrating thing about Newcastle then? Because every week on this podcast, we have Dave, basically. Very frustrated, very angry, talking Manchester United.
Angry man these
Manchester
days.
Manchester United fan. And it's frustrating for him because it seems like they have no plan. You look at Manchester City across town, they're absolutely smashing. They've got everything set up for success. Pep Guardiola's coming in. They're set up for success for the future. Even Spurs, for me, I look at that. We've got the new stadium on the way. We've got Pochettino. We've got
but he's on his way out.
Players. Well, you know, I don't think so. Everything looking good for the future. Is a frustrating thing about Newcastle is there's never seems to be any sort of long-term plan. It's all like, you know, as we've seen in this transfer window, Mike Ashley panicking. It's all short-term.
That's not this is not panicking.
It is panicking.
It's not. You've constructed the spine of a team that can play well under Steve McLaren.
Well, that is in panic because we haven't done anything for 5 years, mate.
That's what I mean. But
what they're doing now is, instead of what they should have done is, all right, see that 90 million or whatever it is, 85 million that was spent. Mm. Over the last sort of 3 years, we should have gradually invested and picked the right players at the right time instead of scurrying and scrambling around going, is Shelby available? Oh, we'll take him. Yeah. And Townsend, all right, we've got to have someone. Berahino, this shouldn't have been a thing that was started. You don't bid for someone in the final 2 days of the transfer window. You get your business done early and you get it done and get it out the way.
Yeah. Isn't that the problem with this transfer window is that it actually sets clubs up to sort of go, okay, well, we'll strike and buy and we'll go in and we'll get someone that
because
we use.
West Brom would have far more likely have sold at the start of the window when they had much more time to get their replacement in with the 20 million in cash plus that were offered. Then at the end of the window, when there's one day left, and they would have had to scramble around themselves.
I think it's like sort of, you know, whoever's director of footballs or whatever, playing a game where they're like, yeah, we'll put a bid at the end and we'll press them. We'll
it just
them-
doesn't show much of a plan, does it? But no. I think that also does that also show a sign of scarcity in the market, that actually there's not a plethora of really fantastic strikers that you can invest in. Everyone freaks out.
I think that's the thing. It's, you know, it's just one of those things where we are being dictated by the seller. The seller's dictating, right, in the market at the moment. You know, whoever's got the talent, because the academies are failing in the UK.
They really are, mate.
There's no one coming for
you. Yeah, not though, are they, Dave?
The lad that I quite like is Aaron Ronald. What's he called?
Rolando.
Rolando, that's the fella.
He's our Raheem Sterling, essentially, but he's never actually gone on and shown what he can do because he's been injured.
So. That's the thing, because he had played like 5 games at the start of last season, was it? And he was banging goals in and he looked good.
He played on his own up front against Manchester City. We had the reserves out and he ripped them in New Arsenal on his own, basically. Mm. But he injured, so he's like Raheem, he's like Daniel Sturridge's little brother, basically.
Injury prone.
Like, do you know what I mean? And he's always injured like that. So the academies are failing, and what that's doing is giving teams like West Brom just so much power to just say, fuck yous. Pays more until they get a ridiculous price for.
Do you? And that's where I always come to the conclusion that when the players, when FIFA Pro get their way, which is basically, you know, you won't be able to demand huge transfers for people. You won't be able to keep people at clubs when they don't want to be there. When they get their way, then it takes the power away from the seller and it actually gives it back to the player, or as FIFA Pro call it, the employee. Mm-hmm. So the power goes back to the union, essentially. And that means then...
Well, that's where it should be, mate.
Yeah, but the problem is that then the union... Is the union in bed with the wrong people, the agent? Mm. Is the union in bed with the agent?
So and the then agent's the agent, not going to benefit massively from that.
Well, you'd hope not, but because actually the structure would be that you never stand to make a huge amount of money, and instead of paying transfer fees, you pay sort of compensation to clubs, or, you know, there's a different movement of money, which basically breaks down the capitalist structure we've built up now, but it's still in a capitalist structure. But it's the next big Bosman rule. Basically, is you can no longer hold on to. So, say Berahino wants to go, you can't say to him, no, you can't break your contract. You literally go, okay, then you go.
Well, initially, talking about Berahino, I really admired the way that West Brom, and I don't like West Brom as a this footballing side. I think they're an awful, horrible team. I hate
them. Really?
Tony Pulis.
What I like about it is that it's clever.
It's dinosaur. It's just dinosaur football.
Dave, that's clever in a time where everyone's going, how smart can we be? How smart can we be?
It works, right? But at the end of the day, I don't watch football to say, oh, well, that was clever. I want to see beautiful, attractive football and fun. Entertain me. Yeah. That is, it's awful. It really is awful. Like, and what
aristocratic gatherings.
And what annoyed us, right? I don't mind what they did originally, because I'm not going to slag them off for this. I think it was right, Berahino kicked off, and he deserved to be put in his place a little bit.
Yeah.
Drop him to the bench, sort your attitude out, mate. But I think the time comes when you're cutting your nose off to spite your face.
Correct.
Right, now was the time to sell him in the January, because what benefit are you going to get from having a player who isn't going to be happy, is obviously, they've said all these things about him, is going to sit and rot away on the bench. Just... you know, sell him on. You've made your point. You've yeah, killed yeah. 6 months of his career. Why do it for another 6 months?
Well, something that we were sort of talking yesterday after the Football Report Live, that it's sort of like, it's a waste of talent. It's a waste of English talent.
That's not good to see,
But that's actually what Tony Pulis has said, is that he's wasted his own time. But the problem is...
Well, can I ask you a question? Let's talk about the greatest manager, English manager of our generation, our era, Bobby Robson.
Yeah.
Would he, with a Berahino, have not have been able to get the best out of that lad and motivate yeah. him, even at West Brom?
He's a very different kind of manager, isn't he?
Tony Pulis' attitude, Stakes. As much as Berahino was petulant, he is a kid, and he's going to be petulant when he doesn't get his own way. It's up to Pulis to get the best out of a yep. player and motivate him, and he didn't have the ability. But his answer was, get on the bench and rot away on the bench. And it actually, Pulis' attitude harmed West Brom as
but
well.
But the point would be, has he scored goals when he's been on the pitch? Yes.
Well, recently, very
so,
much
so. Has Pulis still kept his team in the Premier League?
Yes.
But so
has he done the optimum yeah. job, like the best job he could
but
have done?
But that's the point, is from the outside, maybe we're saying the optimum job is to be entertained. Mm. But from the inside, all they're saying to him is, listen, Tony, you keep us in the Premier League.
But then you want more. Happy. Like, you've always got to see more. You've always got to see that bigger picture. If you're Pulis and you've got a player of Bellerin's
yeah,
calibre...
Dave, what's the bigger picture for him? Yeah, but that's the point, is the bigger picture...
You've got a dream.
Team, but the point is that the
theater of dreams.
You've got to think that you can win that league.
But Pulis is seeing the bigger picture.
He's not. He's surviving relegation season in, season out. And he's playing rubbish football. And going back to what Brian said a second ago, that's what it is, right?
True.
That's it. That's football. That is football. You want to see good football.
No, you're being prescriptive, and your prescriptive analysis is limiting your appreciation of. And I'm not putting you down.
I'm not saying
it's,
that it's
limiting
saying,
your appreciation of what Tony Pulis has achieved.
I'm not saying it's a bad way to play, but I just don't
you
like
are.
It. I don't like it.
Do you think West Brom fans, truthfully, as much as I think their priority is to stay in the Premier League, and
no.
I respect that, and that's fair enough.
The answer to this is no.
But are they enjoying this?
So no.
I've got a mate from university that's a West Brom fan. Goes week in, week out.
Drop him.
Rubbish. Absolute rubbish. Hates it. At home, not attacking at home. Leaving Callum McManaman on the bench when they're 2-1 down.
Now tell me this, though.
What convinced me was when they played Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
And they played Crystal Palace earlier this season. And I've never seen a team with less bottle in my life.
Yeah.
It was just they came... It was actually like Newcastle played when we played West Brom, ironically. But they just really didn't have any... motivation to win the game. It was like, alright, a draw is what we'll go for. I mean, it's Crystal Palace, mate. It's not Real Madrid. At least have a go.
Beat
they didn't even try to win the game at all.
That's a product of the Premier League, I'm saying. And I'm saying Tony Pulis and his tactics right now are a product of what the Premier League has done.
Yeah, which is going back to the whole academy thing. That's the issue at the moment. We're driven for these results of poor quality, but anyway.
Let's switch gears slightly. Predictions. Football predictions
for
this
what?
Season.
Oh, well, you see, what I was going to say was, can I just ask Geordie one question?
Oh yeah,
Geordie, you manage Newcastle United on your own FIFA channel. Is that what you would do with the team, or
What was really strange was one of my first signings was John Joe Shelby.
Yeah.
That was one of the first signings
wow.
I made.
That is so interesting.
And when George Shelby signed,
yeah,
everyone was...
Don't feign it, Dave.
Everyone was
it's not
like,
fascinating.
It's finally happening.
that is so crazy.
I signed Berahino as well.
Did you really?
And loads of people were like, it's actually all going to come true, but...
Does Mike actually watch your channel? Is that what's going on?
Yeah. There's no
funny?
Scouting. They go, we've seen this guy called Opta Geordie.
Hold on. He's actually got a point this time.
Squawker Geordie.
Squawdy.
When I did the Copa, the Copa 90 Why I Love Newcastle video, I always wondered, like, you know, how the club would act when they were approached in official way by a company to get me to do something with the club, and just what their reaction would be. And it was an emphatic no. Where me pal Spencer had done the West Ham video, and he'd been allowed to go in the crowd.
How good's that?
I mean, he was virtually, you know, cutting the grass and rolling around like a snowman off of Frozen. Vooj went into Anfield. He was loving it. And Geordie's not playing Knock Your Door Neighbour outside of St. James's. Hello there.
Literally.
The security guards are like looking at us, and they all know who I am, and they're like, do we go up to them? Or?
So you're saying they know of you and they don't... he's in the club.
They were contacted by Copa, who said, we want to bring True Jordy in to talk about the club, and the answer was, not him.
Did you therefore light a bag of dog shit on fire and
left
it leave
on
it
outside his doorstep? Yes, yeah.
Outside the shop.
The thing is with Newcastle, though, it really is a goldfish bowl, and I say that in the most affectionate way possible. I love the fact that in that town, everything revolves around the club. So, like other YouTubers, the voice isn't as loud because people are so crazy about the club in Newcastle that when you have someone like me, people listen to us even more so about the club. So, you know, can you imagine someone going to Manchester United and Man United even knowing who they were on YouTube? Wouldn't even happen.
I think that's the big thing, though. We need to have that connection with fans, right? We need the voices, people that are passionate about their football club, like yourself, like myself, like Lawrence, like Adam. We need to be not like heard, but if there's someone that's got a good voice in the community, why not embrace that? Why not sort of take that up and say, okay, yeah, we've got the True Geordie's a great lad, cracking lad, does all this great stuff. Why not getting involved? Do you know what I mean? Why not bridge that gap?
I understand initially why they might have had an issue with this, because I have called Meg Ashley a fucking cunt on many occasions.
But my question is, who hasn't?
That might have had something to do with it, but with good reason, to be fair. And I think if they had let me in to the ground, what I would have said is...
You sound like a stepfather. Let me in.
Let me in. Yeah. That's not...
Why won't you love me?
I'll leave it there. I was going to go off on one. But if they'd let me in, I would have actually said, you know what it is? I've said a lot of things about Mike Ashley, but fair play, he's signing players, and he's let me in, and he said, you know what it is? Say what you want about the club. And I would have actually had a lot more respect. But the way they just blocked me off and shut us down... I mean, I know they've blocked a lot of the newspapers off for a lot less, and they have censored themselves. I'll never censor myself, but at least they could have...
Wouldn't that be the best PR ever?
But the point
probably
is...
Probably would have been
but the
good
point
for them, but in terms of the fans...
But no one's thinking about that in PR. No one's going, OK, how can we innovate this? What they're thinking is, how can we keep the numbers and just keep them the same?
Damage limitation.
How, when we go into the room with Mike Ashley, can we go, right, we've been on Blurt and we've seen that 50% of people are happy with Newcastle United. That's all they want. They don't, very few PR people, although I know some innovative PR people, very few of them want to go, we're on the very edge. Most in PR people go into their client and the client go, have we started an Instagram? And they go, we've started an Instagram. And they all go, brilliant, see you next month. And that's it.
Can I
so
be
they don't care.
PR, is that an easy job to get into? Because that seems like good money.
You'd be absolutely banging at PR, mate, I tell you that.
Easy.
Get everyone psyched, pumped.
So obviously, can I get a beer company involved in that? That'd be awesome.
Yeah, like a sort of Corona.
Corona or maybe Peroni. Remember, lads, we're going for the Peroni.
I like a nice cool glass of Gazprom.
You're talking there, Jordy, about how Newcastle perhaps don't improve you. Obviously, they've heard of you through your YouTube channel. That is what you're known for. How did you get started YouTube game?
It was an accident. I just uploaded a rant one day after one of me one of my pals had passed away, who was like a huge Newcastle fan. I mean, he like, you know, like those fans who just like live and breathe for that club. Like every day is around the club and that. And I went to his funeral, and it was about how much he loved Shola Amiobi and things like that. And I was like, this is like, I remember I just stood outside the church listening to the service and that, and I was thinking to myself, this is mad. He loved football. And I kept thinking about it, how much he loved Newcastle. And then Niall Ranger, not long after that, a Newcastle player who was like a reserve team substitute at the time, who had a bad reputation anyway, comes out, and we were booing the team at the time because they were fucking terrible. They were really, it was like Pardew's worst brand.
God, yeah.
It was like, I mean, we were getting beat off Sheffield Wednesday. It was fucking awful. So we were slagging them off, booing them. And now, I'm not someone who actually boos the team, but what I think is, if you want to boo and you pay the money, you have every right to boo the team. Niall Ranger, least of all a player who's done nothing for the club, should ever comment about what the fans fucking do, because we'll be here long after he is.
That was
the point
too, right?
I thought in my head. Of course, I laid it out on a video. Didn't have a channel, there was no notion of True Jordy or anything like that. Just a rant. I called it a True Jordy's view on Niall Ranger. I told him, taking pictures of him holding the gun up. I hope he shoots that gun better than he shoots the football, because he's fucking shit.
Absolutely smashed him.
There was people writing articles about why footballers need to keep their mouth shut more because of that video, sort of thing. Right? But anyway, within a few days, it got like 70,000 views, and and I didn't have a channel. It wasn't like I had. It wasn't like when Andy Tate was on Full Time Devils and there was a structure and a network and we can push this video and do all of this thing. There was no True Geordie channel. It was just Football Fan 533, which was my first email I had when I was 11, and that was my channel. So everyone was like, "Oh, I'm searching for you. I keep searching True Geordie. Are you True Geordie?" And that, and I was like, "Ah, oh, that sounds like a good name. I'll just call the channel True Geordie."
Yeah, no.
And that was it, really.
This is like your full time thing now. YouTube is your full time life.
Oh, that's pretty much it, mate. It's pretty mad, like.
One hell of a job. What is your sort of like? What's the day to day of being like a YouTuber? That's what everyone seems to want to know.
It's not like what people would think. So like, you see some YouTubers who do like a week in the life of, and some YouTubers do have like a really good week in the life of, like like Spencer, for example, just did a really good week in the life of where he's talking to this player and talking to that player. But like a normal like week in the life of for me would just be like, I get up, I'll record a video and I'll edit it, and like it won't be exciting. It's like you're watching the football and you're wanting to, and also you want to put out good videos as well, so you're sort of thinking to yourself, you know, will people like this? Like, I want people to actually get something from this. Like, and I want to be passionate. And one thing I'm really a big believer in, which I think that some people maybe miss about YouTube, is I don't want to put out crap videos ever. Like, I feel like some people would say, oh, well, I did a good video here, so I can sort of put out a 10 out of 10 effort here, but a 5 out of 10 effort there. Like, I want every single video that I do to be, like, it might not be brilliant, but I want it to be, like, a good video so that people will always want to come back to my channel and they'll never feel like, well, that was just half-assed, that last one, so I'll not bother. So that's what I put pressure on myself for.
It's the quest to perfection, right? I think we've all got it here. We've all got the want to... I think, you know, we're saying, yeah, we're laughing, but we do. We have that ingrained in ourselves that we want to produce something that's very, very good. Like anytime I go on anything, it's always about delivering the right things and being passionate about it. And that's the beauty of what we do, I think, that we can express ourselves. I think we're artists. Looking back on the day,
Dave, you're really giving yourself too much credit.
I never said that. I just say that was his words, not mine?
The top clickbait. This posted on Twitter.
Matter over here. He's speaking for himself, not me.
This posted on Twitter is literally just going to be True Geordie. What? We are artists.
What I want to say is, when I miss a video upload or I go a few days or whatever and I know I need upload, it actually annoys us and it really gets under my skin and I'm like...
So.
And when I see people tweeting and saying, why haven't you uploaded? I'm like, I fucking really want to, but either some shit happened that day, my car's fucking broke down, I'm at the fucking mechanics, and I'm like, why don't you just fix me fucking car because I want to get a video out, you cunt. So that's kind of what it's like sometimes, you know.
What a lot of people went on, though, what did you used to do before you're into YouTube then? What was your sort of job in your career?
Well, I mean, I had a few jobs when I was younger and that. I worked with butchers when I was first, like, 16 years old and that. And I was at college and, you know, I did, like, a couple of daft little jobs. And then I ended up, ironically, on YouTube, which should have been a fucking sign there and then. I seen this video of some, like, deep sea divers and I just thought, that looks cool as fuck. That looks really dangerous, but I like the look of it. And then I started doing research into like deep sea diving offshore on the oil rigs. And of course, it's one of the most dangerous jobs offshore, even, which offshore is dangerous as it is. So they get paid a lot of money. So I was like, well, I'm never going to make that kind of money sitting on my fucking arse in Newcastle. So if I've got to risk my life to make that kind of money, I'd actually probably do that, to be fair. Like, so I went and did it. And I did my training up in Scotland near Ben Nevis. And I had to live there for like 3 months. And then luckily, offshore is kind of ran by Geordies. That's Geordies sick. Are really like helping each other out offshore, so I got a little bit of help. And I did that for like a good few years, and then I did that video on YouTube and I fell into YouTube. Now, the money in diving's better, but you know, at the end of the day, this is your dream to talk about what you love, which is football.
Passion.
Were you passionate about diving? Like, did you sort of, was it a lifestyle for you?
Diving for me was a means to an end. So when you originally do diving, right, you get in the water and it's fucking dangerous and you're thinking, bloody hell.
It's a rush,
it's exciting. Once you get over that, you're just basically an underwater monkey doing basic work, like, you know, using grinders and things of that nature.
You were on Grindr when you were
grinding up and down, yeah. Like a strip underwater, mate. I was like a fucking mermaid. And, so, but like you do basic engineering work underwater and eventually it just becomes really repetitive, but obviously...
Is it a bit like being in space?
Well, that's how they
train astronauts. No, I'm not kidding. It's the opposite way. Yeah.
They train astronauts in a pool using diving gear. But
yeah.
I didn't enjoy it at the end because it was 12 to 15 hour shifts, manual labour, all day, every day.
Is there good camaraderie, though? I mean, you have to be close with people. If you're basically trusting your life.
I'm my best friends in diving, because what happens in diving is sometimes it's not just in diving. You'll be in a pub in the middle of nowhere where you don't know anyone and you're 500 miles away, and some cunt swinging a pool cue at you, and you find out who your fucking friends are pretty quickly then, mate.
Why, why are they swinging a pool cue at you?
They wasn't swinging a pool cue at me, mate. No one fucking swung, but they swung one at me, mate, and that quickly organised that situation.
Why has anyone
been in that situation ourselves?
Not yet.
Go to the north of Scotland and you'll probably find that happens quickly, especially if you sing the English national anthem.
Yeah, well, there you go.
that's why, then. What's next for the True Jordy, then? Like, obviously, you know, you're on your own channel, you're on the Football Republic, you're on the Dream Team, you're everywhere at the moment.
Yeah.
What's the sort of aims? What do you want to be accomplishing in the next kind of year or so?
Or
you just sort of see how it goes?
Well, I feel really lucky to have even gotten where I've gotten. So I'm kind of like, sometimes I'm like, fucking hell. Like, I've gotten 100,000 views on a video. And I remember when that first ever happened, I was mind blown, and now it happens to us really regularly. But even now, I'm like, fucking hell, got 100,000 views on a video. I still get quite like shocked by that now. So I'm just trying to appreciate what I've got and be better in everything I do. And what I think is, if you be better at everything you do, then doors will open. You'll not have to like look for them. It just happens out of nowhere. And that's all I do. I just try and be better.
Before we finish up, then, the big question we've got to ask you is, we often talk on this podcast about our spirit footballer. Who is the footballer who embodies your very essence?
Give him your example, Dave.
So Lawrence McKenna believes that his spirit footballer is Xabi Alonso. I think he's aiming a bit high. Xabi Alonso is probably the coolest footballer on the planet. Exactly.
My aim of a spirit footballer.
Footballer.
That's what we were trying to work out earlier. Is I don't really know. His head's already
going. It might be Joe Allen, because Joe Allen wants to be Perlo.
Yeah, but I don't want to be Perlo.
I think that the thing with you, though, is
quite witty.
I can imagine you got the. You'd have the technique of him. But I just don't think you've got the bite. You're not nasty.
I don't think Xabi Alonso has a bite.
He doesn't bottle a tackle either, and I think you might do a little bit.
What do you think?
Judging by TFR 11, mate.
Well, we'll see on the weekend, won't we, mate? Yeah. So
hiding out there. I mean...
Well, you put me in the centre, mate, and I'll see you there.
I will next time.
When I'm swinging a pool cue at you on Sunday night, you won't know anything.
I tell you, many tried, many died.
Is there like a footballer
Dave said he's Darren Fletcher. You really
see apparently Darren
Fletcher.
That's
right, I know, works hard.
It's good, yeah.
He's a player that
you appreciate the beautiful game, and although Fletcher was all right, he wasn't exactly a player like that.
He was very appreciative of it, though, wasn't he? Identified what he went into Manchester United and knew he had Paul Scholes and Roy Keane at central midfield, a ball playing excellent player, and then Keane a brute, and realised there's someone there that needs to do the running, and he understand that to get into midfield at Man United, he needs to have something else. And what he did for Man United when Cristiano Ronaldo was there is he'd shuttle over. He'd be the one going over to cover that flank. And that's what I like about him so much, that it was he'd do something to get everything else working. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel that's...
Is that you? That is you.
I try and play the same role.
It's essentially what Manchester United lack now, isn't it?
100%. Someone that kind of gives...
One thing that comes to my mind when I hear Darren Fletcher is on Championship Manager, not Football Manager, Championship Manager years ago, when David Beckham retired or left Man United... Darren Fletcher was always the next Beckham, and he actually turned into the exact same attributes as David Beckham. He was the next Beckham.
What?
Mm-hmm.
No, it didn't work out.
No, that was what happened.
Dave, are you the next?
My David spiritual Beckham? Footballer.
Yeah.
A lot of people might think I would say Alan Shearer.
Oh.
But I am a little bit nastier than Alan Shearer, I think. Because I remember when I was 8 years old, a little story for you here. I was like a big tall lad, but I had a really good like touch, and I was actually decent with the ball at my feet, but I was never the fastest. But you know, like maybe Leticia or Zlatan, but with a really bad temper. And I remember one time that I got singled out in five a side, and they'll keep on hacking us and trying to like wind us up, and eventually I just snapped and I smashed this lad at 8 years old, and I was the only player to get sent off in 8 year old five a side football at my school. So that was
basically you're Duncan Ferguson then, is that what we're saying?
Do you know what I really feel like, actually?
Because he had talent. Duncan Ferguson had talent.
He did, he signed for Newcastle, and him and Shearer, unfortunately, got injured, both of them, but they were amazing together for like two games.
That is actually a good combo, isn't it?
It was unbelievable. Shearer was one of the only big centre-forwards who held the ball up, who could play with other big centre-forwards. Mm. But,
do you know what? The other day we were watching, we did the front three YouTube, and I had to research when Shearer was sort of coming towards the end of his career, like between 2003, 2005, and he got his first injury.
Breaks me fucking hot.
And you guys were in the Champions League at that time. Uh-huh. And you had a good side. Ooh. Like you, the football you were playing in the Champions League, I think a lot of people forget, was actually really good football.
Mate, Bobby Robson, a lot of people say Kevin Keegan, best Newcastle manager, couldn't hold the candle to Bobby Robson because Bobby Robson actually made us defend decently as well. Mm. So and he did it in the modern era, whereas Keegan did it when in the early mid-90s, where it was still the Wild West of it.
I think that's the beauty of managers like that, like Ferguson, like Robson, that they can attack so well, they play brilliant football going forward,
very similar,
but they can defend. That's it.
Anyway,
my spiritual footballer, and I hate to admit it, right, because I know he doesn't like Newcastle, it's Roy Keane.
Really?
It is, and I know it's Roy Keane, and I know, as soon as you said it, I thought it's Roy Keane, because...
Yeah, it's what comes out of your heart, isn't it? It's sort of, that's my mind went straight to Alonso.
Do you know what made me realise? Me and Roy Keane were similar, when Rio Ferdinand turned up piss-farting around once, and he was trying to fanny on in training, and Roy Keane said, "This is Manchester United," and what he was saying was, "You're at this fucking standard now, mate," and if I was in that situation and some young kid was pissing around, I wouldn't do it in a nasty way. I would do it to help him out, but I would say it in a nasty way to make sure it got done.
Yeah.
And that's the type of thing that I would do, and I think that he was a leader, and I'm a leader. I feel like I am a leader as a bloke anyway, and I just think that I hate to admit it because he hates Newcastle, but he would be my spiritual footballer, to be fair to him.
There you have it then, guys. True Geordie, spiritual footballer is Roy Keane.
It's fascinating.
I think that is on that bombshell.
On that bombshell.
Excellent manager.
What are you going to say?
Dave's got one more question. Go for it, Dave. There you go. Okay, yeah.
Go on then.
So, if the true Geordie was a warrior from the medieval times.
Me, we're getting a dip now, like.
Yeah.
What weapon past life, would you wield?
What weapon?
Yeah.
So, if you were a warrior in the medieval times, what weapon would you wield?
I can tell you exactly what weapon I would wield. Do you know on Braveheart where he had a regular sword, but he had a massive sword?
Oh, I like that a lot.
Because the thing is, you need big arms to handle a sword like that, but I would just... That would be my weapon.
Excellent.
William Wallace's sword, that's the answer.
That's what you go, that's a brilliant. We thought axe, we thought mace,
I thought
a
mace
sword.
You could really do some damage with a mace.
Imagine the true Geordie charging at you with a William Wallace sword.
With a kilt on, bollocks and all, coming at you, massive sword.
All I see is, you know, in Lord of the Rings, when they've got the little guys on their backs, is Geordie's one of those ones walking towards. Adam, would you wield?
Have that visual image in your mind as we finish this podcast. Remember that.
Especially the women out there. Geordie and a kilt.
Coming at you.
Wielding his weapon.
And slightly aroused. Anyway, listen.
What would you wield?
I'm not quite sure. What medieval weapons are at my disposal?
You've got a bow and arrow. You have a long bow.
More
of a backroom general, isn't he? He's more one of those people who sort of sits on the throne and goes,
I'll let everyone else die in front of me. I'll organise it.
And Dave? You must have thought about this in order to ask the question, is what I'm saying.
I'd be a sword and shield guy, I reckon.
Yeah, that's the thing. You wouldn't have a shield.
Offense.
I feel like you wouldn't have a shield. You'd literally just go just sword. Do you know what I mean?
Bollock naked.
Yeah. bollock naked, but for a kill.
Do you know what I think Lawrence would have? A bow and arrow. And you just pick them off.
Of course.
Sneaky.
Pick them off one by one.
In the same way I pick off narratives, I just...
In many ways.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Listen, that brings an end to the Talking Point podcast. I mean, fantastic. Yeah, other Geordie. It's been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much.
Geordie, it has been fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us on, lads. And I think everyone should get behind your podcast. I like it.
Head over to the True Geordie YouTube.
Like it, subscribe. Love it, follow it.
Subscribe to the front three, that's all I'm saying.
He's on board, he's on message.
You know what I want to do?
You can Vine that.
I want to go deep sea diving with Geordie. I want to go back to your roots.
I wasn't that good, mate, so not child. Yeah. I would ask you.
One thing that I reckon, though, what about the front three going to Newcastle on a night out with the true Geordie?
This would be
explosive.
It would be. I mean, more than you know, mate. More than you know.
Adam Boltwood there, lovely voice of his. It's a shame Adam's not properly on the podcast this week. I'm sure he had a lot he wants to talk about. Dave, your highlight of that?
It's got to be the sword, hasn't it?
Yeah.
How scary would that be? How intimidated if you'd been the English fighting William Wallace, a.k.a. the true Geordie, with his double-handed sword?
You know,
sword.
The true Geordie's not Scottish, but he's a bit Scottish.
I imagine he would be, though. Imagine the lads from Newcastle would have gone to Scotland, wouldn't they? Would have sacked England off.
I don't think they would, and I think that's a true bone of contention between the Scottish and the Geordie. But, yeah, it was a great point. And, Dave, you put the right questions to him. Kristen, which medieval weapon... There's too many football podcasts talking about medieval weapons right now, but which medieval weapon would you wield if you were out on the battlefield?
Well, we're all descended from Vikings up here anyway. We use a lot of the same words. In fact, one of the words that Geordie might use for home, which is hjem, actually is the same word in Danish for home.
Interesting. It's not a question I asked, but...
A massive axe.
Really? You go for an axe?
Go for it.
Why would you go for an axe?
Not a mace?
Now I'm thinking about it. I quite like the idea of a bow and arrow, but...
The term bow and arrow is used almost as a disparaging weapon, sort of like, because Geordie said, you know, oh, I could see Lawrence picking people off with a bow and arrow. He was putting it as a coward's weapon.
It is a coward's weapon.
Is it? Dave, did you say you'd have a sword?
Sword and a shield, mate. I'd go bloody old school on them.
Yeah, so heart, one arm brave, one arm not so much.
Not so much brave.
Anyway, let us know where you would leave your... holes with
enemies.
Where you leave your enemies after you've cut them up. Which ditch did you leave them in? Tweet us the front three on
number three.
And Chris, if people want to go find you, if people are interested in your insight, where can they find that?
At khenEAGE.
Dave, are you?
I think you could drop into Google.
Yeah.
Dave Talks.
Yeah.
YouTube. Let's see if this actually works. This is the first time I've done it.
Does it? Yeah.
And no, it doesn't work. No, it doesn't. So do not do that.
So don't do that.
Abort.
Oh, no, it does. So yeah, you've got a load of minion stuff. But if you scroll around the page, there it is. Dave Talk.
Brilliant. I don't know if that shows you more about Dave's viewing habits than anything else. YouTube does tend to put what you like at the top of your searches, but yeah.
Brands, sponsorship is available.
So off we go. And of course, you can find us at The Front Three on Twitter, also on YouTube, where you find The True Geordie. You'll also find a preview of the weekend and a review of the three things we enjoyed on the weekend. Go over there, hit subscribe if you haven't already. And please, if you can, tell your friends about it. Tweet it at people. Tell other people there's a YouTube channel. Share it. I love going into places. And I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I love it when someone else watches something and it's not bloody How to Make a Murder or whatever it is. And I can actually discuss it with them. Very rare. Do you know what I mean?
Do you not like Making a Murderer?
No, it's just, you know, you discuss the same programs with people. I like it when someone likes something that is, you know, a bit more, I didn't know you like that. Do you know what I mean?
Coming across as a bit of a Ken Kratt here, isn't he, Dave?
Yeah, he is. Hatred. Hater.
I don't know who that is.
Exactly, that's the point.
Yes, brilliant. Okay, so go over there, subscribe, and we'll have a good time there.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
We'll see you again real soon on the front three. Saturday, in fact.